I'm Mark Olson. I write about movies here at the Los Angeles Times, and this is The Real, the podcast where culture and entertainment meet. HBO is pushing the envelope with its new teen-centered drama, Euphoria. Sex influenced by pornography, wanton drug use, aimless youth. It's a horror movie for parents. But is it a fair representation of the post-9/11 generation? The first set of kids to come of age with smartphones perpetually in tow? That conversation's coming up in a moment. On a lighter note, we'll also talk about the return of Younger. The hit romantic dramedy is back for its sixth season. With its deep fan base, the TV Land series seems to have cracked the code for keeping appointment television relevant in a streaming world. Let's listen in. HBO's new drama Euphoria stars Zendaya and new actress Hunter Schafer as troubled teens in a contemporary American suburb. The Times' Yvonne Villarreal called it an unflinching portrait of teen life, and Yvonne joins me now.
Thanks for having me.
And so now tell me a little bit about Euphoria, the fact that there has been a lot of talk and controversy around the show even before it's begun airing. Why is that? What's the controversy around the show?
It's an HBO show, and with that comes the freedom to push the boundaries a little bit. And there's sex, there's nudity, there's drugs. And I think when you have those kind of elements with adults, it's passable. When you have those kinds of themes with teenage characters, it becomes a little more heated. You have organizations like the Parents Television Council sort of taking issue with some of the subject matter that we see. And a lot of the headlines before its launch zeroed in on the shocking elements of the show. And it gets people talking. Like, having a headline mentioning penises, it's going to get people talking. And so then there's like this focus on what is this show and what is it about and what is it going to show?
Well, it's somewhat funny that for HBO in particular, after all the controversy and conversation they had around Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. and it's how much female nudity there was on that show, right. and lack of male nudity there was on this show, that Euphoria has gone to the other side. They have a lot of male nudity that you have not really seen on HBO before. And it's funny to me that that's the thing that seems to have really upset a lot of people right off the bat.
There's a locker room scene where we see the male anatomy in all its glory. And because it's a locker room scene, there was supposed to be like something like 80 shown, but it got truncated to about 30 penises because for taste's sake, I guess. When you get those anecdotes, that becomes what people start talking about. And you talk about Game of Thrones, and it is an interesting thing where it's one thing when it's fantasy, but this is real life that we're seeing. And I think it makes people a little more uncomfortable.
You wrote a story about the show. You interviewed its two stars and the creator mm-hmm. of the show, Sam Levinson. And something that Sam said, and please note that he's 34.
Yes.
He said that things are changing so quickly for young people that it's not for an older generation to tell a younger generation how to live their lives, how to respond to media culture, social media, or online culture, that we're all learning how to figure this out together. And what did you kind of make of those comments from him and just the perspective of the show? Is this show even for teenagers, or is this show specifically meant in a way to translate the experience of contemporary teenagers to an adult audience?
The cast and Sam sort of stress that this is a show for an older audience and maybe parents more specifically. But obviously teenagers will watch what teenagers can get their hands on. And Zendaya said if that's the case, if younger people are watching it, they hope that it sort of starts a conversation about these topics that we all try to turn a blind eye to. We don't want to acknowledge that this happens. And the thing is, none of this stuff is really new, like drug problems or the fear of your kids having sex. That is not new. But what's different is you have this generation that's grown up on YouTube, grown up on social media. They're dealing with things in a different way than a lot of us had to. Like, I worry, like, I do have the fears for my niece because I'm like, it's all right there on your fingertips. When she's watching a YouTube video, you don't know what other videos she can just start clicking on. And You hope the parent controls are on there, but it's like you never know what access they have.
To me, the most shocking thing on the premiere episode is early on, there's an introductory sequence with a voiceover by Zendaya. And she says, I was born 3 days after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I nearly fell out of my chair just thinking about the idea that a sentient human, like lead character of a show, born into the post 9/11 era. Yeah. I mean, I think that says how far in our relatively recent past that those events now are. And also the fact that there is a generation of person who has grown up in the aftermath of that. And I think the idea that this is a show about growing up around trauma, dealing with pain, how do you grapple with all of those things?
On top of the very real thing of coming into adulthood. And I think it was Hunter talking about, like, there is no roadmap and you're straddling your childhood as you're heading into adulthood. And it's this weird thing where you're put into adult situations and you don't know how to navigate them. You're dealing with kids that grew up on social media. Their expectations and views of sex are sort of shaped by what they see on the internet. And a lot of times it's pornography. Like, they have their hands on that. How do you navigate that world? I wouldn't know.
Well, Mary McNamara, a writer here at the LA Times, wrote a terrific piece where she compared the world of Euphoria to the world of Booksmart,
right.
A movie that's also about young high schoolers, and the way in which Euphoria in particular, it's not so much that it grapples with the darker aspects of teendom, but what Mary called a perpetual oscillation of mood, mm-hmm. the way in which you're just constantly whipping from being really excited about something to be really upset about something, and the additional pressures that mm-hmm. teenagers feel now because of social media, because of the speed at which it feels like everything's happening.
Yeah, because teens now are figuring out who they are in the real world, but also figuring out who they are on social media, which are two different personas. This is a show that really, it's showing not everything ends up the way it does for the young ladies in Booksmart. There are people where this is just their luck. They're stuck in this world where not everything's going to come out rosy at the end.
I was so taken by something Hunter said in your article where she said how so often when parents look at their kids and they see them on their phones and they think they're just zombies, mm-hmm. but actually those kids are involved in this very fast-paced, like, alternate reality that is probably happening at a much faster mm-hmm. pace than the, quote, real world. And I think that is something the show is trying to get at, even in the sort of, like, intense stylization of the visuals, the way the right. show is shot and edited. And I feel like it's trying to get at that sense of, as Hunter said, an alternate reality.
But yeah, I think it captures these issues that we don't often see in these glossier teen shows that are on, like, broadcast or even cable. Because it's sort of easier to have the glossy version or the satire of what high school is like than really talk about some of these issues that young people deal with, because they are scary.
Tell me a little bit more about Hunter Schafer. She's a trans woman who mm-hmm. plays, her character is trans on the show. And I think that in and of itself is groundbreaking for an American teen show. Tell me a little bit more about your experience interviewing her.
She was living in New York and doing some modeling for Marc Jacobs and Dior, I think, when she saw this casting call for this role, and she saw it on Instagram. She went to public high school, so she knows some of what this world is like. She said she didn't experience too much of the extremes of it, but she was like, I had my social accounts when I was in middle school. This is the world that I grew up in. And whereas Zendaya, she was a Disney star from the age of 13 and didn't really have the traditional high school experience. But she too talked about, like, having friends and knowing what it's like when a video that you don't want out there leaks, or when people are talking about that video and it gets around. So it was interesting just to hear their perspective on what it really is like to be a young person right now.
And I found the performance by Zendaya in that first episode to be really strong. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've seen the trajectory of the young Disney star sort mm-hmm. of breaking out from that mold, maybe doing something that feels a little wild or a little dangerous before. Is there something different, you think, in the trajectory that Zendaya is on, in particular, given the fact that at the same time she has Euphoria, she's also Spider-Man. In the Spider-Man pictures now with Spider-Man Far From Home coming out in just a couple weeks?
She said that she was looking for a project that did take her out of elementary school, basically. And then Euphoria came along, and she said she just felt strongly about portraying somebody going through these sort of struggles. And the character is modeled after a lot of what Sam went through, his own addiction story. And it was interesting, her and Hunter talk about that Sam puts musical cues in the script that help them get into the zone of what the character is. And that sort of helped her a lot with portraying some of the darker moments that this character goes through. She wanted to do justice to the storyline, especially because she said, you know, I've never done drugs, never drank, so I don't know really what it's like, and I wanted to do the role justice.
And along those lines, we have a clip from the show of when Zendaya's character is being confronted by her mother about the fact of whether or not she'd come home loaded.
Where were you?
I went to eat.
What do you mean you went to eat?
What?
What? Don't walk away from me. You know what, Rue? I don't trust you.
I don't know what you want me to say.
I want you to tell me where you were.
I just said I went to eat.
Don't you talk to me like that. You know what? I'm gonna drug test you. Don't be slamming no doors around here.
It was an accident.
I don't care. You're not leaving this house until you take a drug test.
I just peed.
Slam another door.
The girl's gonna be the death of me.
And from that clip, we get some sense of the relationship between the character played by Zendaya and her mother, played by Nika King. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship to the adult world is on the show? Do the kids even interact with their parents very much?
In terms of Rue and her mother, we do see a lot of the struggle that her mother has in understanding what her daughter is going through. And also, how do I get a handle on this? How do I help her? Because it's a hard thing when with teenagers don't want to talk to their parents. So understanding what is at the root of this, I think we see that get explored. And we see some of the other parents too, but you get a sense of where some of the issues stem from for a lot of these kids.
Because you and I were talking a little bit earlier, and do you get a sense, is Euphoria a show that we're even supposed to enjoy? Joy? Like, what do you think our relationship to the show is supposed to be? Like, it's not like a fun party show.
Right.
It is quite fearsome and terrifying in its own way.
Yes.
And yet there is something really engaging in the performances. And I think there is a real draw to this sort of somewhat amorphous drama. But what are we even supposed to be getting from this show, you think?
I think just an understanding at the root of it. And I did find it sort of fascinating to get this peek inside what the younger generation is going through. And I don't have kids. I have nieces and nephews. And my niece is becoming a tween. And I do have that worry of what is she being exposed to? How do I keep her safe? I think in that way, I was sort of fascinated by it. But I think just having an understanding of what we're not seeing in other shows.
And now just as a show being broadcast on HBO in its post-Game of Thrones era, what do you kind of make of this as just a corporate decision? What do you think of the idea of HBO deciding to put a show like this on the air right now?
Well, it just shows that they can. They can experiment. We've had shows like Skins, and Netflix has like On My Block and Sex Education. But I don't know, there's something different about a show like this. Because it's very raw. I can't speak to how authentic it is because it's not my experience, but I think it's just like a nice antidote to everything that's out there.
And we will certainly keep our eye on the rest of the first season of Euphoria, and we'll see.
Are you going to keep watching?
I found Zendaya and Hunter very compelling performers.
Yes.
And their dynamic on screen, I think, is really interesting. And it's a relationship that I haven't quite seen depicted before. Mm-hmm. And so I'm intrigued to keep watching largely for them, and we'll see how it goes. Like, I was very taken with the fact the first episode was directed by Augustine Frizzell, who's a filmmaker, had a movie called Never Going Back that came out about a year or so ago that also was kind of about wild teens. And I'm interested to see if the style of the show remains the same, like if they get other independent filmmakers. What about you? You think you're going to keep watching?
I think I will keep watching because I did find myself drawn into what they were experiencing, and I do want to know how they navigate it.
And we'll end on that note. Yvonne, where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, and my handle is at @VeaRilly.
We'll take a brief break and return to talk about Younger with two of my colleagues who are big fans of the show. The clip of Euphoria was provided courtesy of HBO.
This episode is brought to you by Succession on HBO. Critics hail the first season of Succession as the best show on television, irresistible entertainment, and a must-watch show. For your Emmy consideration, an outstanding drama series, and all other categories. Visit hbo.com/FYC for more on Succession.
I think I pretty much had feelings for you for 16 years.
What?
Since you're 26 and now you're 42. Oh.
Younger is back for its sixth season, largely without the secret that was driving the show. The series mostly no longer has the lead character Liza, played by Broadway star Sutton Foster, lying about her age. Without that initial motivating conceit for the show, Younger has become an examination of women in the workplace and a modern take on the romantic comedy. And to talk about this unlikely television object, I'm joined by my colleagues, entertainment writer Ashley Lee. Ashley, thank you for being here.
Of course, anything for Younger.
And also making his first appearance on The Real, our brand new television editor, Matt Brennan. Matt, thank you so much for being here and welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
And so, Ashley, I'll start with you. With this sixth season of Younger, where are our characters? What's the sort of top line events going into this new season?
Okay, cool. So Younger initially started off with Liza Miller, a 40-something, re-entering the publishing industry as a 26-year-old assistant. And it was a great conceit. The lie was kept up with everybody. But at this point in the sixth season, there's a love triangle that's pretty much seems resolved. We'll see where that goes. The lie is out to most people except for her former boss and most of her peers, but it's out to her closest colleague, Kelsey Peters, who's played by Hilary Duff, as well as her former boss slash new love interest, Charles Brooks, who is played by Peter Herman. And it's good. We've already gotten caught up on the next few episodes, and it looks like it's going to go into some pretty cool places this season.
And now, Matt, if the show has largely abandoned what was its initial motivating premise, what's it about now? What has the show become?
This isn't a terribly novel observation, but I think the best way of describing it is Sex and the City for millennials. And it's kind of a fantasy of being a 20-something in New York who works at a publishing house. It isn't realistic, and that is sort of the draw, is it's such light, frothy, fun viewing that it really fills this space that I think had kind of gotten smaller with the rise of prestige dramas and very serious television. But now with so much on TV, it can often feel like a relief to turn something on that's 26 minutes, that's fun and jokey and has romance and has this sort of fantasy world of literary life in New York. And Younger, to me, made its name by having the best gags about life in publishing, about figures in publishing. It's always very sharp on that front.
I have to say the whole reason why we're even having this conversation about Younger is before the sixth season premiere, before the first episode of this new season aired, there was a just sort of a spontaneous conversation broke out among a number of people where the sort of Younger hive suddenly represented itself. And I did not even realize the show really had a deep fandom. I certainly didn't know there was like in-house fandom. Ashley, can you talk a little bit about just your own relationship to the show, your own fandom of the show?
Sure. I'm obsessed with the show because I lived in New York for 5 years. And I feel like when New York is portrayed on TV, like you said, in the time of prestige drama, it's very gritty. It's very full of crime and, of course, very male driven. And this is a gap that Sex and the City used to fill, in which it is a beautiful, glamorous New York City that is full of women who are working. And in fabulous clothes. And thank God that Darren Star and Patricia Field, who collaborated on Sex and the City, are also doing so for Younger, which is why we have these amazing costumes for everybody. And the locations are real. The references to New York City are real. One of my favorite episodes, sorry if this is a not suitable for work moment, is when Hilary Duff's character has a sexual encounter on the tram that goes to Roosevelt Island, which is apparently a thing that people do in New York, or maybe just a small subset. But the little funny quirks and observations about a woman's New York are really represented in this show. And it's just, again, so fun to watch.
And now, Matt, tell me a little bit about how a show like Younger gets to six seasons. As we're talking about television here on The Real, we're usually talking about the first season of something. We've had a number of conversations about the difficulty of the second season. And here's a show that just seems to have breezed its way to six seasons. And I know Darren Star has already talked quite openly about his plans for a seventh. In the contemporary television landscape, how does a show like this get to six seasons?
Well, I think one thing is it's on TV Land, which is a network that has attempted to build an original programming profile. And its most successful property is Younger. So they have stuck with it and been loyal to it because it's done well for them. It's really been a runaway success for them. I also think that Younger is a show that benefits from past season streaming on Hulu.
Yes.
That's how I actually caught up with it. Is I think it was in its fourth season, and I was looking for something that I could watch at the end of the day that wasn't taxing after I'd spent the whole day already thinking about television. And Younger ended up being this sort of perfect pop confection that I loved. And I was able to binge those first four seasons that were on Hulu very quickly. And I think this is kind of genius on TV Land's part. Current episodes aren't available on a streaming service. So what it does is it sort of forces you to tune in live if you want to participate in the conversation around the show. And like you, Mark, I sort of discovered Younger fandom after I went on Twitter and talked about my love for it. And then all these people were like, oh my God, you watch Younger? Let's talk about Younger. I think it is also a little bit of a self-selecting fan base, though, in terms of entertainment and TV Twitter. Writers love Younger.
And actually, you said that this, in fact, is appointment television for you. The model of having the show be only available linearly in sort of the old-fashioned way of watching television, it sort of works for you?
The luxury of having episodes from other networks on Hulu the next day have trained me to be, when it comes to those programs, to be like, oh, I don't need to watch it right now. I can just see it in 12 hours on Hulu. But because of TV Land's model, I would have to wait months for the whole season to drop on Hulu. So yeah, I care. And I have to make that appointment, which is so rare for 2019. And especially for someone who works in entertainment. So it's been great.
I'm so interested in this idea that it's a contemporary take on like a Sex and the City, obviously created by Darren Star, creator of Sex and the City. But also, Matt, as you were saying, that it's not that concerned with realism. Why do you think it is that entertainment Twitter wants a show like the dream life version of their lives? They don't want the gritty, real version of like waiting for that freelance check. They want the like exciting, sexy version. The reason why you moved to New York in the first place, maybe.
I think that is actually exactly it. It's actually being a writer is pretty boring. You guys know that as well as I do. Watching someone who works in a publishing house go to work in glamorous clothes, even though she is posing as a 26-year-old assistant, or Hilary Duff's character is promoted at the beginning of this season to the head of the publishing house's millennial label, and she's 28 years old. If that isn't kind of a dream job material, then I don't know what is. And it's that that makes it so entertaining and not, again, like homework. There's room in the landscape for a really hard-hitting show about journalism. I think The Deuce has had some success doing that in a period vein. I would love to see sort of the equivalent of a Spotlight for TV, but it's nice to have something that's just fun. Being a writer's hard, so watching someone really succeed at it, even if that's a fantasy, is nice.
But also, it's funny to me, the idea that writers on TV, television, people who cover the entertainment business, people who are on Twitter, that doesn't necessarily sound like a television audience to me. Does it speak to the way the dynamics of television are right now?
Well, I think Younger is a perfect example of a show that has a conversation around it that's happening online that is feeding into its viewership that is now a key component of the sort of marketing of a TV show, for lack of a better word. So you can have a big, broad audience, and there are still shows that have large audiences that don't get talked about much online. I think The Big Bang Theory, which just ended, is a perfect example of something that did not get a lot of coverage in the press, but had a huge overall audience. But when you're on sort of the further reaches of cable, you don't need to be reaching 18 million people a week. And so it's really about motivating a more passionate fan base to tune in regularly. And by having that fan base also be talking to each other on social media is one way that you can generate that kind of interest. And I think Younger has done that in an organic way better than most shows by letting that build over time and not trying to force the issue. Sometimes a corporate social media can kind of interfere in what's happening with fans, and Younger plays off of what's already happening with fans in a really clever but not heavy-handed way.
Yeah, I totally agree. There was a really cool marketing initiative that the show did. In one of the plot lines, there was a book written by a character played by Jennifer Westfeld, and it involved a real-life plot line based on a character in the show, if that makes sense. And it was in the show, the book is a hit, to the point where the show actually published the book in real life. So you can go to your bookstore and buy Marriage Vacation, the hit on Younger. And it was actually written by a real author with a very juicy sex scene, the same one that was teased all over the place in the show. And so the fact that the fan, whether in the entertainment industry or otherwise, can interact with the show in that way, even in a bookstore, which is so rare for a show to even take their marketing these days. It was so fun, and they totally understand their fan base. They really do.
And now tell me a little bit more just about the cast of the show. Star Sutton Foster, a beloved musical comedy star and star of the woebegotten Bunheads, a show that I have a great affection for. And then also just a fantastic cast, Debbie Mazar, Hilary Duff. Ashley, what is it that you like about the cast?
We also have the wonderful Miriam Shore, who has the best wardrobes and the best one-liners of the show. Peter Herman, Charles Michael Davis, which is great to see someone who is African-American and Filipino as an executive in the book publishing space. Before he joined the show, it was a pretty white show. So adding him was really smart, and he brings a lot to the table. He's a great foil and love interest for Hilary Duff's character. And we also have Molly Bernard and Nico Tortorella, which is really cool because Nico is a non-binary actor. They talk about that issue when they have a gender reveal party. So it's really cool. Again, real life going into the show and the show going into real life, it's a real feedback loop.
I also think that Nico's role alongside Peter Herman's role and having a 40-something character be at the center of a love triangle between a very hot 20-something and a very hot 40-something is worth celebrating. And I think that that's actually one of the things that keeps people tapped in to wanting to watch it live is I don't want to have the love triangles resolutions spoiled. And that to me is the combination of having a female forward cast where they're really driving the plot, but also having interesting other characters as sort of romantic interests and foils makes it feel very vibrant all the time.
Totally. And it's not even just limited to that love triangle because Liza, who's played by Sutton Foster, again, also has a tryst with Christian Borle, who is in real life her ex-husband. They were married for 4 years. They had a very amicable split. And then he came on and played a love interest for a few episodes. And it was such a treat for people who know her career before Younger. And it's just amazing. Got to rewatch those episodes if you did not know that before.
In all seriousness, though, to me, the biggest draw of the show is its ability to skewer the literary world. It's gone from having very specific gags about particular authors who you could sort of identify, to having much more sort of general jokes and satire about the publishing world, but also about how the publishing world intersects with the wider media world. So coming up this season, there's a really, really fun subplot involving a true crime serial style podcast that on Younger is called Exonerated. And they have also had an ongoing gag where Reese Witherspoon, who does not appear in Younger ever, is mentioned a lot as being the executive producer of shows based on books that the publishing house in Younger is making, which I think is hilarious given Big Little Lies and Reese Witherspoon's real life involvement in optioning books for TV projects.
And then how does it feel like the show's kind of depiction of women in the workplace? You were saying how Hilary Duff has been promoted this season. Is that one aspect of the show that feels, if not realistic, perhaps aspirational? Like, how do you feel about the way this show sort of like depicts women in the workplace?
I love it. They are so flawed. They're so fully drawn. They're still so funny. They always look great. So partly realistic, partly aspirational in different ways. I love hanging out with them and I love watching them. It is really nice to see three women played by Sutton Foster, Hilary Duff, and Miriam Shore working together, butting heads at the office. It's never catty. It's not as one-sided or flat in ways that other shows or movies have done in the past. It's the way that women butt heads at work. It's the way that they team up at work all the time in other offices every day. They just do it in really great clothes here.
There is a scene in the season premiere that is so good. It actually sort of wiped my hard drive clean. Like, I couldn't remember anything else that happened in that episode or the subsequent episode because it was so good, where Hilary Duff and Sutton Foster begin singing 9 to 5 to Miriam Shore in a bar. And then she begins singing it back and it turns into the three of them doing it together. I called it on Twitter quadruple cheating because it's just like, that's too many things that I really like all at once. That's blatantly going to get me involved in the episode. But to Ashley's point, it stems from an argument that begins with Diana, played by Miriam Shore, feeling as though Hilary Duff's character has not been forthcoming enough with her about the changes at the publishing house. And that felt like such an organic concern to me. One character is significantly younger than the other and therefore less experienced in the business. And the feelings that Diana has about being squeezed out because of her age, and this has been an ongoing plot throughout the series, really feels earned to me because they haven't ever pushed those concerns off to the side. It's been very much front and center. And on the flip side, concerns about being a young person with a lot of responsibility in the business, in a business that's often dominated by older, more experienced sort of aging lions, is also something that they've stuck to consistently. And that ongoing attention to that issue makes any kind of fun that they want to have with it feel genuine.
Also, to resolve it with Tony Winter, Sutton Foster singing at any point is fine. Marie's Crisis is a real bar in the West Village in New York, and it's show tunes on the piano. It is wonderful.
Do you think the paper would send us there?
I mean, I think we should just do it anyway. We'll just go sing 9 to 5. You can be Diana Trout.
It's a deal.
Okay.
And we actually have a clip from the show. I think this features Sutton Foster and Debbie Mazar.
Nice pantsuit. Did your funeral director's license finally come through?
Ah, everyone at work now knows that I'm the assistant Charles was having the affair with, so I don't want them to look at me and think sex, sex, sex.
Oh, mission accomplished.
Hey, even the suit in that moment is amazing, so still great.
I like that the show is willing to have fun at the character's expense from time to time. Debbie Mazar's character in particular is always sniping at the other character, and so is Molly Bernard's
yes.
character. It has a very Thelma Ritter in Rear Window kind of feel to me, that it just constantly makes you aware that the writers know that these characters are not perfect, that they're not unassailable, and that they can take a joke about themselves, which makes it just to me feel, even though the situations are often fantastical, like being a 28-year-old head of a publishing house, the interactions both among friends and among coworkers that happen on the show are, to me, very much true to the kinds of conversations that we're having in the newsroom. You know, we're not all head down, super serious all the time. We become friendly with each other and crack jokes, sometimes at each other's expense or at our own. And that's what makes going to work with people that you like really fun.
Terrific. I think that that's a great place for us to wrap up this conversation about Younger. Thanks to the both of you for being here. Ashley, where can folks find your work online? Where are you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is Cashly Lee.
And Matt?
Curiously enough, for a TV editor, my handle is at the filmgoer.
And I'm, of course, at Indie Focus. And so for LA Times Studios and The Real, I'm Mark Olson. Thanks for listening. And that's it for this week's show. This episode was produced by Katie Cooper and edited by Mike Heflin.
This episode is brought to you by Sharp Objects on HBO. The limited series was hailed by critics as exquisite, hauntingly compelling, and a true masterpiece. For your Emmy consideration in Outstanding Limited Series and all other categories, visit hbo.com/FYC for more on Sharp Objects.